Welcome to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services, a show about coping with getting older ourselves and dealing with our aging parents. If you have questions about how to cope with these stresses, call Scott at 877-960-9960. Now, here's Scott.
Welcome, everybody. Another edition of Oh My God, I'm Getting Older, So Is My Mom. We're very excited tonight to have a very special guest. You know, the Florida State Legislature has ended their session. They've ended their session. And a great deal has transpired during this year's sessions in Tallahassee. My guest is here tonight to tell us exactly what did happen and how it will impact all of us in the coming months and years. Senator Tina Pulsky is here, and she represents the 29th Senate District in our area, and I'm going to speak with Senator Pulsky in just a second. But first, just a couple of brief things. Please get vaccinated. If you haven't been vaccinated, get vaccinated. It'll change your life. It is liberating in every way. And as it relates to masks, do what you're comfortable with. If you're outside and you follow CDC guidelines, that's fine. But otherwise, just follow the guidelines. Be nice. Do what you possibly can to help you and your fellow citizens. Before I get to my guest, though, I want to one more time remind everybody that on Thursday, May 27th at 1 o'clock, the Alzheimer's Community Care is hosting a free. 2-hour webinar that will be a game changer. If you are struggling with a family member who has Alzheimer's disease, I encourage you to tune in. Just go to allscare.org for more information. That is Thursday, May 27th at 1 o'clock. But now to my guest. Let me tell you a little bit about Tina Pulsky. She represents the 29th Senatorial District, covers parts of Palm Beach County and Northern Broward. She was born in New York, which you'll hear momentarily. She got her BA from the University of Pennsylvania in 1990, and she got her law degree from Columbia Law School in 1994. Her career experience includes being a lawyer and a mediator, and she's also the founder of the Mitzvah Lunch Club and the ambassador for Samaritan 365 Kindness Matters. So, Senator Pulsky, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you, Scott. Were you implying that I have a New York accent?
I might have been just hinting at that. I don't know if everybody would remember, but you were here back in 2017, and you were on the same show as Lauren Bair when she ran for Congress, and you did a great job. Of course, you won your seat back then. Unfortunately, in my opinion, she didn't, but we had a good time back then. And then you were on earlier when you were a mediator, so this is not a new experience for you, but a lot has happened since the first time you've been here. Thank you. Just so everybody knows, we're pre-recording this tonight because the legislature has been called back into session to address a specific bill, which we'll get into a little bit. But let's start here. Just for clarity, why don't we tell everybody what area you represent in the Senate?
Sure. There are 40 senators, so the big state is divided up that way. We each have about 500,000 constituents. So my area, District 29, is southern and western Palm Beach County, all of Boca Raton, western parts of Del Rey, Boynton Beach, all of Wellington, Highland Beach, Belgrade and South Bay in the Glades area. And then I have all of Parkland, all of Coconut Creek, and part of Coral Springs. So a big area.
Wow, that is a big area. You know, most of our audience, particularly if they've come down from New York or from points up north, they believe our legislature works like their legislature, which is that they work all year round. But our legislature is a little bit different, is it not?
Yes, that's right. We only meet for 2 months out of the year. This year we were there. We just ended April 30th through there, all of March, all of April, and we have committee weeks leading up to it. So we kind of go in and out of Tallahassee as we meet with our committees about 6 weeks, a couple of days a week prior to session starting. Once session starts, then we're able to pass bills and work on the budget. The budget is the only requirement of the state legislature. All we have to do is pass a balanced budget. All the laws that you hear about are just extra. None of those are required, except some bills that go along with implementing the budget. So a lot of stuff happens there that, especially the last couple of days, they call it the couple of most dangerous days in Florida, those last few days of session when crazy bills pass.
And a lot of that has happened, which we're going to get to. I want to come back to the budget because it really is, as you said, the only real requirement, but also critically important for the people of our state. You're a Democrat. Most people in your district, you have a majority Democratic district. A lot of people in South Florida think everybody is Democratic, but around the state, nothing could be further from the truth. Democrats are in a very significant minority in the state legislature. How is it being a minority, a relatively small minority, in state legislature? Is that an advantage? Is that a disadvantage? Is it both? How does it affect what you want to do for your constituents?
It's definitely a big disadvantage. There's one small advantage, which I'll get to, but it's really tough to be in the minority. So in the Florida Senate, we have 40, as I said before. We only have 16 Democrats, and they have 24 Republicans. The only thing that we can hold up if we all stick together are votes that require two-thirds, and taxes and public records exemptions require two-thirds vote, and also some procedural rule changes. So we have a little power. We don't use it too often. We used it once, and we did kill a bill, which I'm happy to talk about later, but we're in the minority. So in the House, we have a bicameral legislature, just like the federal government, where there's the House of Representatives and the Senate. We have the same exact thing with the same names. And I was in the House previously for 2 years. One full term is 2 years. And there's 120 representatives. And we have now 41 Democrats. So similar, just two-thirds, a little bit over two-thirds, to stop everything from rolling over us. But in the House, the Republicans run every single committee. The only difference in the Senate is because they were smaller. There were three Democrats who were the chairs of committees. So the chairs of committees are the ones who decide which bills get heard. Bills have to go through committees, and then they get to go through the process, usually three committees, and they can get voted on the floor if they make it that whole way. So the chairs of committees have a lot of power. And so when you're in the minority, it's much harder to get your bills heard. That's number one. The bills that the Republicans put forward, all the other Republicans almost lockstep vote yes. Once in a while, especially in the Senate, we have a few that go against, but it's not very often. The Senate used to be a little more moderate and kind of the adult in the room, where they would stop some of the bad legislation because the bills have to pass both chambers. So the Senate had the ability to stop bad bills. It was less so this past session. And it was kind of unfortunate. What I see happening is we lost one Senate seat and five House seats. Obviously, Trump won Florida. We don't have any U.S. senators who are Democrats. And now the Florida Supreme Court has been changed because Governor DeSantis had, I believe, three appointments because of term limits or age limits, I should say, in the Supreme Court. So even the Supreme Court, which used to be kind of our safety net to stop bad legislation, has changed and is much more conservative. So they really run every aspect of our state government. And as a result, we really are swimming upstream all the time, the Democrats. It's really, really tough. So the atmosphere this year was even worse than my last 2 years, it seemed, because they, as I said, gained six legislative seats. And with Trump winning by a larger margin than anyone expected, I think it was about 3%, they think the state has really turned red. And they kind of ruled with a sense of entitlement and a sense of empowerment, and much more right-wing conservative types of bills got moved this year than I think would have if some of the results were different in Florida.
And is that being driven by the governor's office, or is that being driven by the more extreme elements of the Republican Party around the state, perhaps in the panhandle or in other parts of the state? Or is that being driven by the national Republican Party, or all of the above?
Probably all of the above, but I would say what seemed to us to be the biggest driving factor was the governor's agenda. And everyone said who looked at this once session was over was the governor won. The governor got what he wanted. He got these kind of red meat issues done, and it's all in furtherance of his reelection campaign in 2022 and his potential presidential campaign in 2024. And that was probably the most frustrating part, is that we weren't working for the betterment of Floridians. We were working for the betterment of his campaign and the Republican Party. And it was very clear, because the things that we passed had nothing to do with what we've been through with COVID, what we're continuing to go through, what Floridians are seeking. It had to do with wedge issues and just really, like, kind of like DeSantis loves to say, owning the libs, giving it to the libs, and just really putting their stamp on every aspect of society where normally the Republicans wouldn't go. So it just seemed to me to be very politically driven more. And look, it's only my third year, but everyone said, you know, longtime pundits, it was just one of the worst sessions of all time.
And we're going to get to some of the specifics as the show unwinds, but so in the state Senate, because I don't think everybody understands this. I know in the House, it's term limited, 4 terms, 2-year terms. What are the term limits in the Senate? How often do you have to run for reelection? What does that look like in the Florida Senate?
It's the same thing. Pretty much everybody has 8-year term limits, the governor, the cabinet positions, senators as well. The only difference is that we have 4-year terms. So there's something they call this ping pong, where in an election year, they decide by random ping pong, I believe, if you have a 2-year term or a 4-year term. So there are some senators who end up with 10 years under their belt, but no more than that. Most will have 8. So normally it's a 4-year term. So I won in 2020. And I have another session, so there's 2 sessions in each term. But in November 2022, I'll be running for reelection instead of 4 years because of redistricting. So that's another very complicated issue. Every 10 years after the census, there's redistricting. And that means that the Republican majority gets to set the boundaries for in the Senate, the 40 districts. And we will each increase our load of constituents probably by about 50,000. Because of the numbers that increased in the state over the last 10 years. We're not going to have any more Senate seats, so we just each get more constituents. And so every person is up in 2022, whereas normally only half the Senate would be up. So it's a little bit different, but we still generally have the 8-year term limits as well.
Not to dwell on this forever, but yes, Trump did win the state by a larger margin. That's true. But as I recall, the gubernatorial race was about 0.5% in terms of the difference, and the Senate race equally close, or just about as close. Is it your sense, and I guess nobody knows, this is really just opinion, is it your sense that we are closer to a purple state than a red state, or are we firmly a red state at this point?
I'm going to try to be optimistic and say we're a purple state because, yes, the governor won by about 30,000 votes. We had, as much as I liked Andrew Gillum at the time, you know, he was a flawed candidate and had some difficulty, you know, in that race. And so, you know, it doesn't seem that hard to turn 30,000 votes if we have the right candidate. Unfortunately for us, Governor DeSantis is very popular right now.
Yes.
So we have to see what plays out. As far as the last presidential goes, I think everyone can agree that there's a Trump factor that wouldn't normally be present. And while we haven't been able to win in 20-something years statewide, you know, we did have a Democratic U.S. Senator, Bill Nelson, for a very long time. He lost by very few votes. And, you know, given a different candidate, we could really have a change. There's a lot of talk about how Miami was very influenced by the socialism messages, and we did win Miami, the Democrats, but not by enough as we needed to kind of carry us forward. So, you know, we have new leaders of the Democratic Party in Florida. We're getting, you know, new infrastructure. So I'm not going to give up hope, really, because the registration, there's more Democrats than Republicans. We have a lot of no party affiliates, the independents. So we always hope that they go our way. And, you know, at least like in my race, a perfect example, they were split exactly down the middle because I won by exactly my Democratic margin. So that means if you look at the Democrats voted for me, the Republicans voted for my opponent, the independents must have been exactly split in the middle. So we just have to keep our Democrats going. After the last election, there was a lot of party switching to the Democratic advantage. And so, you know, I'm going to stay optimistic that we're purple. It's just the results haven't been great. And you mentioned something before about how the rest of the state really isn't blue. And when you look at those maps on, you know, the presidential election nights and you see there's so much more red, it's kind of like the country as a whole. But the pockets that are blue are very heavily populated. So that's South Florida where we live, Miami, Broward, Palm Beach, parts of the Orlando area, parts of, you know, Tampa, St. Petersburg area, a little bit in Jacksonville, but the rest of the state is red. So that's why, you know, it's some gerrymandering and we're going to have some issues with that redistricting, but there's just so many more, so much more geography that's red, not so many more people, but that's why the map looks like that. And that's why they have more senators and more representatives because we're all spread out all over the state.
No, it's fascinating. And I think when transplants, and of course, Florida is made up of many transplants like you and I, the reality is that we come here expecting that we're like other states where we may have come from. And the truth is, our government in the state of Florida really doesn't work at all like what most of us are accustomed to. And it is, you know, it's really eye-opening when people begin to get their hands around that and understand what the legislature's role is in the state of Florida, including the fact that most legislators have other full-time jobs besides legislators. And it's and that's also a very interesting dynamic that most people don't fully grasp. Correct?
Yeah, I was very surprised to learn that when I decided to run. I mean, I was a very aware, educated person, and I always voted in every election since I lived here for 16 years, but I really didn't know much about state government. And so it has been quite eye-opening to see, you know, how we really are ruled by Republicans because of the way the state is laid out and the way the districts are formed. I mean, there are people who have, one of my colleagues, also a freshman Republican, she has 11 counties.
Wow.
You can imagine how sparsely populated those areas are. If I have two counties, and most senators probably just have one county, I just happen to have, like, you know, some of the border areas.
Right.
So my other two senators in Palm Beach County only have Palm Beach County. There's only three senators in Palm Beach County, by the way, and there's about 6-7, you know, representatives. So it really is very interesting. And, you know, I'm sure for people who have driven through the state or even gone to Orlando, you know, you see how different it is once you get out of, you know, the tri-county area down here. And, you know, we're surrounded by a lot of New Yorkers, Northerners. It's kind of interesting because on the west coast of Florida, a lot of Midwesterners move there.
Right.
And it is very Republican over there, Naples, Sarasota area, the Villages, super Republican, and they vote. They really, really vote a very high percentage. So a lot of votes are built up in those areas. The very interesting thing to watch, especially with redistricting, you may have heard that we gained one congressional seat. That seat is supposed to be what they call the I-4 corridor, the Orange County, Orlando, Osceola area. That's the largest growing area. We had a lot of people who moved after Hurricane Maria, I forgot the name of the one, right, in Puerto Rico, you know, moved up to that area. It's very diverse. and it's growing like crazy. And so that's where we're actually going to have a congressional seat. I know where you live, where I live, there's a lot of construction, and you think we have so many more people, but we didn't gain enough to get another congressional seat in this area. So that's always the area to watch. You'll hear that on election night, the I-4 corridor, how are they voting? And that's sort of like Tampa on the West Coast and Orlando in the middle going across. And that is, kind of the turning point for the election and where Democrats certainly hope that we will do well. And you may have heard like Val Demings is considering running, Stephanie Murphy, they're in that area. And their seats might get redistricted in a way that make it very difficult for them to win re-election for Congress. So they might be looking at other seats.
That's fascinating. If you're just tuning in, this, of course, is Scott Greenberg. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. I'm so excited to have my guest tonight, Senator Tina Pawlowski, Florida Senator Tina Pawlowski is here, and she's talking about the just-ended legislative session. As soon as we come back, we're going to talk about some of the more specifics we've been talking about legislating in Florida in general, but we're going to get down to what exactly the legislature did in just a minute. And so hang on, stay with us, and we will be right back.
I'm here with Allison from Comfort Care Senior Services. Allison at Comfort Care, you guys are proud to be a family-owned and operated business.
That's right, Mike. It's myself and my husband, Tino, my sister, Melissa, and her husband, Joe, and my parents, Irene and Scott Greenberg. As you can tell by six family members being able to work together, family is extremely important to us. Our clients often have kids that live out of state or even overseas, and those extended family members want to have the comfort of being able to contact a family member at any time to follow up on how mom or dad is doing. While you are able to reach a family member at any time, our office staff is truly part of our extended family. They monitor the phones 24/7 in case of an emergency and are empowered to make decisions that are in the best interest of the client. Because at Comfort Care, it's the quality of care, not the severity of your condition, that determines the quality of life. Call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620, or visit our website at palmbeach.comfortcare.com. That's palmbeach.comfortcare.com.
Do your parents live in South Florida? We know it can be difficult to be there for them when you live far away. As your parents get older, things can change in an instant. Are you prepared?
Finding a trusted local expert to coordinate and provide care makes all the difference. Eldercare 360 can provide you and your family the proper guidance, support, and resources to assist you and your loved ones with their daily activities of living with healthcare challenges.
As a patient advocate, Eldercare 360 brings together a team of patient-focused, caring professionals with decades of experience. Call us to see how we can help before the crisis at 561-713-1800.
Make Eldercare 360 part of your team. Eldercare 360, patient advocacy, coordination of services, and full circle of care. 561-713-1800.
Hi, I'm Laura Oliveris, the president of Silver Solutions, the senior-focused home services company. Unfortunately, COVID-19 continues to be a reality for too many of us. But thankfully, every day, more and more of our older adults are getting protected by the vaccine. At Silver Solutions, we pride ourselves on protecting older adults as well, from safety improvements to downsizing to emptying the home after the loss of your loved one. Silver Solutions is here to help you move forward with ease and confidence. To find out more, call us today at 877-AGE-SAFE. That's 877-AGE-SAFE. Or visit us online at silversolutions.com. Our team is bonded, insured, and follows rigorous CDC guidelines, including the full use of PPE. Life can bring the unexpected, but when it comes to making growing older safer and less stressful, you can count on us, Silver Solutions.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm here tonight with Tina Pawlowski, Senator Tina Pawlowski from the 29th District in the Florida Senate. She has been cluing us in, filling us in on the workings of the legislature in the state of Florida and the breakdown between Republican and Democrats. But I want to get to some of the more specific bills that were passed this year, and I'm going to get to the budget in a little bit as well. Senator Pawlowski, in preparation for the show, we talked a little bit about the culture war issues that seem to be so prevalent. And it maybe it's just my imagination. Correct me if I'm wrong. It seems that a lot of the bills that we passed this year were really more about culture than they were about much of anything else. Am I right about that?
100%. I mean, I naively went into this session thinking we have so many issues with COVID that that's all we're going to focus on. Or maybe we wouldn't do any other kinds of bills. We'll just totally focus on what our constituents needed. And I couldn't have been more wrong. They came in like gangbusters. And as I mentioned before, I think that the leadership, the Speaker of the House, the Senate President, really felt emboldened by the results. And they were very excited to gain more members, each of them, have a bigger majority. And they decided to push an agenda. And something you mentioned before about National Republican Party or some of these think tanks and conservative groups are pushing legislation across the country that you may have heard about. So some of those include election reform. That's probably one of the worst. There are some others that we'll get to, but that's pretty relevant because I'm not sure when this is airing, but Governor DeSantis signed the bill today in Palm Beach County and held a rally about the election bill. So you may recall, especially people who have lived here a long time, that we have often been the laughingstock for elections and how we've managed some pretty bad elections in our time. Well, the legislature has really worked on it, and we did some bills over the last couple of years that increased the amount of time that they can count mail-in ballots. And you saw on election night this past year how important that is because Florida was ready to go. I mean, all our elections were in by 10 or 11 o'clock at night. And as a candidate, I can tell you how great that is.
Right.
But, you know, even when we were all sitting there with bated breath, like, what's going to happen, you know, and we want to know a big state like Florida is done. And so we did a great job. And everybody said it. And you heard Governor DeSantis bragging about it. And you heard everyone really pleased. The supervisor of elections did a great job. So what do they do pretty early on in session? We need to reform our election laws. And you know that this went on in Georgia. It got a lot of press. So it started off horrendous in Florida. The bill changed a lot as it went through the process. As I mentioned before, it goes through a few committees, and it goes through the House, and it goes through the Senate, and then they have to merge the bills at the very end. They have to come together. We have to either accept one or the other, or we constantly amend the bills, and that's where it gets ugly and dicey. In this instance, the bill did get a little bit better. I'm not going to pretend that it was, you know, it's the worst bill of all time. But there's absolutely no reason for it, and it does make it harder to vote by mail. It doesn't change anything about in-person voting, but a lot of people voted by mail. And here's the real kicker. For years, they've been making vote by mail easier because the Republicans held an advantage. So the same senator, Senator Baxley, I think he might have been a representative at the time, first changed it to requesting vote by mail every cycle, so every 2 years. Then they changed it to every 4 years. And that's been the law for about 10 years. So what happened this year? I think that the Democrats doubled the Republicans in vote by mail. Why did that happen? Remember Trump saying, don't vote by mail, don't trust the mail, go in person, and don't worry about the pandemic. So who voted by mail? The Democrats. And I can tell you from my own experience that I won vote by mail by a lot, and I lost the in-person voting, both early voting and day of, but I won vote by mail by enough to win the election. So the Democrats voted by mail in our area. And so what's the first thing they do? They want to change vote by mail and make it harder. So the very first thing they did was say, we're going to wipe off all the vote by mail requests. Well, you know, we went nuts. And I sat on that committee and was very vocal, and many people wrote in and testified. All the supervisors of elections hated it. So the bill ended up with everyone who has a vote by mail request, it's still valid. But every 2 years now, you have to re-request it. So if you have a vote by mail requested now, it'll be good through November 2022. But you have to re-request it right after that, or in Palm Beach County, you can just check the box on your ballot. So you can see where they went from increasing the availability of vote by mail when Republicans were voting more. Now Democrats are voting mail, so they changed it. The other thing they did is some of your listeners in Florida may recall that it was very easy to drop your mail-in ballot at a polling location. They had these special vans that Palm Beach County did, and that was because they had a lot of money through, you know, the federal government to help during the pandemic. So the supervisor leased these vans, and they were manned by supervisor employees, and that was great. People drove up. They didn't have to wait in line. They literally handed it to someone in this van, and they took them away. Or each vote by mail or, excuse me, each polling place has a drop box, and a lot of people place them there. We also have 24-hour drop boxes that exist at four locations in Palm Beach County at the supervisor's office. Well, one of the things that they changed in this bill, which again was signed by the governor today, so it is the law, is that now vote-by-mail drop boxes can only be open during early voting hours. So no more 24 hours. They have to close at 7. They have to be manned at all times. And, you know, they're just making it harder for people who work, who don't want to put it in the regular mail, to drop it off in a location. The other thing that's really bad is, in, especially in senior living communities, more retirement areas, like my Century Village that I have in Boca Raton, they would have a big drop box in their clubhouse, and somebody would volunteer and drive them all to the supervisor of elections office. Now you're not allowed to do that. They're actually making it illegal for you to handle anyone's ballot from inception to when it's filled out, anyone other than your immediate family member, or you get two per election cycle.
Wow.
So let's say you wanted to take some in for your employees, you could only do two. And they really changed the law a lot by that. So basically what they're just trying to do is make it very difficult to vote by mail. And it's very transparent what they're trying to do.
It's amazing. If you're just tuning in, I'm here tonight with Florida State Senator Tina Pawlowski, represents the 29th District in both Palm Beach and Broward counties. And we just talked about the new election law that was signed by Governor DeSantis. So we're going to talk about a whole host more of the culture war and some of the positive things that may have happened. And we're also going to get to the budget, I promise you all. So hang in there. We will be right back.
I'm here with Tino from Comfort Care Senior Services. Tino, you train all of your caregivers on how to deal with those who are struggling with Alzheimer's disease, right?
I do, Mike. This disease process is frightening for everyone, and change is the scariest thing for most people. Where we should start is changing the way we think. People are not dying from Alzheimer's disease. They are living with it, and we have to figure out a way for them to keep on living their best life possible. I always say activities of daily living keep people alive. Meaningful activities is what gives people a life worth living. Properly training caregivers on all sorts of dementia is very important. Learning about behavior modification techniques, avoiding triggers, tapping into the abilities that are preserved the longest with people with dementia, and figuring out what's important to them are all vital tools caregivers need to understand. Remember, it's about the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition that determines their quality of life. Let our family take care of your family. Call us at 561-630-1620 or visit us on the web at palmbeach.comfortcare.com.
I'm here with Allison from Comfort Care Senior Services. Allison, at Comfort Care, you guys really look at every client differently.
Activities of daily living keep people alive. Meaningful activities give people a life worth living. That's why at Comfort Care, we complete a social history for our clients. It taps into one's life story to help caregivers know more about who this person was and, quite frankly, still is. It asks questions like, what did you do for a living? What volunteer work did you do? What was your favorite book or movie? Were you in the military? And the list goes on. Understanding background like this is helpful in creating meaningful activities. For example, if someone was a cartographer in the Army, perhaps a trip to the library to look at old maps of where they were station might be an interesting activity. If someone were an avid golfer, perhaps a makeshift putting green might be a fun outing. We couple that with a day in the life, which asks more of the daily routine questions, so a caregiver coming in is already familiar with the schedule. It makes the adjustment to having a caregiver that much easier. Caregivers want to help their clients live their best life possible. Being armed with the right information can help, because at Comfort Care, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines your quality of life. Call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561- 630-1620.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome back, everybody. Scott Greenberg, Oh My God, I'm Getting Older, So Is My Mom. We're so thrilled that you are with us tonight. If you're a regular listener, you know that we're here every Monday from 6 to 7. If you're a new listener, we're also here every Monday from 6 to 7. Tonight, I have a very special guest. State Senator Tina Pawlowski, who represents the 29th Congressional or Senate District in the state of Florida, is here. And we're talking about the recently ended legislative session, which a lot of things happened. Not all of them good, but some of them were good. I know, Senator Pawlowski, you were instrumental in driving the response to the proposed elimination, if I say that right, or certainly negative changes to the Bright Futures program. And I know that that's something that you point to with great pride this year. Can you tell us a little about that?
Sure. So one of the things, you know, we talked about what it means to be in the minority. And while you don't get a lot of your legislation passed, and a lot of things just pass on party lines and you can't control it, we work really hard to try to kill terrible bills. And we do that in committee by asking tough questions, having good debate, helping advocates get there and testify. So one bill that eventually did really die, little bits of it got into other bills, but the main thrust no longer exists, was about Bright Futures. And for your listeners, if they're parents, if they're grandparents, it's a great program that the state of Florida has where if you are a top student, you get either 75% or 100% of your tuition paid to go to a Florida state school. And what the same senator who proposed the election bill, Senator Baxley, proposed a bill about Bright Futures. And the premise was that you should only get taxpayer money, scholarship money, if you're in a major that would lead to a good career. And so what that means is a major in art history or social work or music or even sociology, which he majored in and he admits was a bad major, they don't lead to necessarily a great career. And so you can see the focus is on STEM, is on medicine, is on, pre-law, whatever the case may be. And the students and the parents came out in droves. The testimony was amazing in these committees. And they were doing it in COVID circumstances. They couldn't even be in the Senate. They were across the street at the convention center. They were being like piped in by Zoom. It was amazing. The emails were nonstop and the calls. So I'm so proud of the advocacy of our community. And I happened to be on education committees, two of them. So I saw the bill and I was very vocal and, you know, doing interviews about it and helping some of the folks who were advocating for it. And Facebook groups popped up. It was, there was a petition, 150,000 signatures on a petition. So all that being said, it led to the dismantling of that provision in the bill. Then he kept in something about how it would be funded. And we had a problem with that because it wasn't exactly a guarantee and students were relying on it. That came out as well. So little bits of it made it into other bills, as I said, but the real problems with it died this session. And it was a terrible idea, and I hope he never brings it back again.
It is fascinating to me that there are times that grassroots activism can make a big impact. You know, another thing I want to ask you about, in light of the fact that Facebook upheld its ban on former President Trump's Facebook account, we passed a big tech bill, and I wonder what you think about that in light of the Facebook decision.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. So the Speaker of the House, in his opening day speech, talked about big tech as the enemy. And it just set the whole session off with such a bad tone. And that's kind of what I was talking about before. Like, they just went off on this kind of red meat, these red meat issues. So the bill that passed is basically disallowing Twitter, Facebook, Instagram from deplatforming a political candidate only, not Scott Greenberg, but you have to be a qualified political candidate. So it's also only during a certain time frame after qualification period, which is a couple months before the election and then the election time. You can take down individual posts if they violate their terms and conditions, but you can only deplatform someone for about 14 days, I think it ended up being. It changed in the amendment process. And then you have to put them back on. And then I guess you could deplatform them again if they act up again. But basically, it's taking away the power of what Facebook and Twitter did to President Trump. And, you know, they use the word cancel culture all the time. But they're basically telling Facebook that they can't act on their own and, you know, as a private company, make decisions about what's right and wrong for their platform. And so they're trying to cancel big tech in a way. And what I find fascinating is this is big government at its worst, telling a private company what they can or cannot do. You know, use capitalism, use your innovation, find another platform. You don't have to be on Facebook. And so I think they should be allowed to run the company the way they want. I, in debate, talked about if you ran a restaurant and there was a customer came in kicking and screaming and making your other patrons feel uncomfortable, you'd kick them out in a second and not let them back in. And it's the same thing. If a political candidate makes people uncomfortable, you know, whatever they post, lies, misinformation, we see how dangerous that can be. They don't have an ability to act as they would like to, and there's huge fines involved, which it's unconstitutional. It's going to get killed in court, I believe. I can't imagine a company like Facebook is going to pay these fines. What are they going to do to them?
Right.
It's just pure theater. It's political theater they're putting on for their base.
And so much of what we've witnessed in the last term, in my opinion, I think I share it with you, it has been more political theater. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the other bills that have passed that have been really critical. I'm here tonight with State Senator Tina Pulsky, who represents the 29th District here in both Palm Beach County and Northern Broward County, talking about the recently ended legislative session. We're going to be back in just a moment. We're going to talk with Senator Pulsky about some of the other really important issues. And we're going to talk about the Florida budget, which is the primary responsibility of the state legislature. And that doesn't get done until the last few days. So a lot of people don't have any idea what's in the budget. Anyway, we'll be back in just a minute with Senator Tina Pulsky.
Hi, I'm Dan Ligani, the CEO of Silver Solutions, the senior-focused company that works like a family for all of your mom and dad's home-related needs as they age. From keeping them safely in their current home, to managing a downsizing or relocation to assisted living, to emptying a home and distributing the family's treasures after the loss of a loved one. Silver Solutions is there to help families move forward with ease and confidence. If you're worried about your aging parents' safety at home, or you're an older adult concerned about losing your independence, give us a call today at 1-877-8 Age Safe. That's 1-877-AGESAFE. Or visit us online at silversolutions.com for a free consultation. We're bonded, insured, and follow rigorous CDC guidelines on all jobs, including the use of full PPE. You can't stop the aging process, but with Silver Solutions, you can make growing older safer and less stressful for the whole family.
Do your parents live in South Florida? We know it can be difficult to be there for them when you live far away. As your parents get older, things can change in an instant. Are you prepared?
Finding a trusted local expert to coordinate and provide care makes all the difference. ElderCare 360 can provide you and your family the proper guidance, support, and resources to assist you and your loved ones with their daily activities of living with healthcare challenges.
As a patient advocate, ElderCare 360 brings together a team of patient-focused, caring professionals with decades of experience. Call us to see how we can help before the crisis at 561-713-1800.
Make ElderCare 360 part of your team. ElderCare 360, patient advocacy, coordination of services, and full circle of care. 561-713-1800.
I'm here with Scott Greenberg from Comfort Care Senior Services. Scott, you're very involved when it comes to the senior community.
That's right, Mike. We firmly believe that involvement in the community, giving back to the community, comes back to us in many, many ways. One of the ways it comes back to us is in our understanding of what's going on, what's new, what's trending. So we're very involved in the guardianship community, for example. We're involved in Alzheimer's community care, in the Alzheimer's Association, in Parkinson's. We run support groups. Basically, what I'm saying is that we want to be a part of the community in ways that we just don't receive benefit, but that we can give benefit as well. It's very important for us to understand the needs of the entire community and the needs of other people who are providing services. It is only through that that we can ensure that we provide the best care possible. Remember, Mike, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines the quality of their life. So remember, let our family take care of your family and call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620, or look us up on the web at palmbeach.comfortcare.com.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Hi, this is Scott Greenberg. Oh my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. Here tonight with Florida Senator Tina Pawlowski, who has been generous in her time tonight telling us about what the state legislature does, what they did do during the recently ended legislative session, and maybe what we didn't do. So Senator Pawlowski, you know, I think in many respects, I don't want to put words in your mouth, we had a lot of failed opportunity in this session, I think, because we ended up getting distracted by things that don't matter that much. Am I correct?
That's a great way to put it. It was really frustrating. We spent the entire time between last year's session and this year's session dealing with our constituents, unemployment issues, COVID-related issues, health care, and we did nothing to fix it. So we only have 60 days in the legislative session, and we have to use our time wisely. We didn't do anything on unemployment insurance. We have one of the lowest rates in the country, $275 a week for only 12 weeks. The reason people were able to manage a little bit was because of the federal bump that we were given. But we're not going to have that next time, or even for any individual who loses their job. They refused to raise the rate. The Senate was willing to go $100 more. The House refused. The governor said so much, and it didn't go anywhere. So we had that entire time to work on unemployment, and we didn't do it. We had a pandemic committee in each chamber. They didn't do anything. What they did focus on, the very first bill, was protecting businesses from COVID lawsuits. There aren't a lot of COVID lawsuits at all. It's very difficult to prove where you got it from. But there are some bad actors out there. And if they didn't do as much as, you know, I know you did in your business to protect your employees, the amount of money that you had to spend to, you know, clean and PPE and protections and plexiglass, whatever, and other places didn't do that, well, then they're just off the hook if they were bad actors. They made it almost impossible to sue as an individual, and also for nursing homes, where we know that it spread like wildfire. And some nursing homes didn't do a great job. Some did, some didn't. So that was the very first bill that we worked on and the very first bill that passed. And to me, the big difference between Republicans and Democrats is that their number one focus is on business. And it's sort of this trickle-down approach. Well, if we make sure that businesses feel comfortable reopening, our economy will reopen. 35,000 people are dead, and countless others, you know, got the disease and have long-haul issues as a result. And there's no caring about them. And nothing changed to help them. We didn't do anything to expand health care. So the two biggest issues were not dealt with at all in those 60 days. What did we deal with? We talked about the elections bill. We talked about big tech. Another issue we spent so much time on, literally there were 11 students, transgender students, who played high school or college sports in Florida. And we have provisions in place to figure out if they're allowed to play and what kind of medical issues they need to prove in order to play. And this is really about transgender girls who were once biological boys playing in girls' sports. That's all that they cared about. This bill died in the Senate after just heart-wrenching testimony. And then they brought it back 2 days to the end in an amendment in an unrelated bill. And this is how they played the games with the rules when they were in the majority. And we spent so much time debating and basically crying over a bill that disallows the very few transgender girls who would like to play in girls' sports. And it just breaks my heart, and it's such a waste of time. It affects no one in the state, and it's just cruel. You know, let these kids play if that's what they want to do. There's so few of them.
You know, I didn't know that the number was 11, but it's that makes it that much worse. I don't grasp the panic. I don't mean to make light of the situation, but all I care about in terms of the bathroom bills and things like that is just wash your hands, please. I don't know why we spend so much time on these culture issues that really have little or nothing to do with the quality of our lives. And it's rare that I take a position on this show, but on that, I'm just unbelievably passionate. If you're just tuning in, of course, I'm here tonight with Senator Tina Pawlowski. She represents the 29th district in North Broward and Palm Beach County, all the way out to the Glades. Many of you are represented by Senator Pawlowski. She's a wonderful representative, doing her best in the minority to bring forth issues that are important. If you tuned in late and you're sorry that you missed the beginning of the show, I have great news. You don't have to miss any of it because we podcast. Yes, we do. We will be up and running tomorrow, and you will be able to listen to the entire show, and I will invite you to send me questions if you have any for Senator Pawlowski, and I will make sure that she gets them. Of course, if podcasting is not your thing, right, OMG I'm getting is the podcast, but if that's not for you, you can go to my website, palmbeach.comfortcare.com, palmbeach.comfortcare, comfortcare, comfortcare. Don't put that T in there. I know you want to. Don't do it. It's not comfort care. It's comfort care. palmbeach.comfortcare.com. There is no reason for you ever to miss our show because if you have your phone with you, you can just download the iHeartRadio app, set it for 6 o'clock every Monday night, and you can listen to True Oldies in the Palm Beaches, and we will be there live every Monday night, 6 o'clock. Don't miss it. Of course, we simulcast any platform wherever you are. If you're on the internet, at TrueOldiesFLA.com. That's TrueOldiesFLA.com. Next week, Dr. Shady Salib, who is an internist here in Palm Beach County, we're going to talk about blood pressure. It's Blood Pressure Month, and blood pressure, we're going to talk about medications, we're going to talk about impact, we're going to talk about complications, we're going to talk about why it's important for you. It's really, really important. Of course, the following week is Memorial Day, so we'll be replaying an important show. But the week after that, Dr. Douglas Leader will be here. He's an ophthalmologist here in Palm Beach County, and he's an unbelievable guy, and he's going to tell us all about our aging eyes. Every time I talk about eyes on this show, people start to call in and they worry about it. So much for us to think about with our aging eyes, and Dr. Leader will be here the week after Memorial Day, so it is terrific. Of course, I still have my guest here tonight. Florida Senator Tina Pawlowski is here. Senator Pawlowski, we don't have a whole host of time left, but we have some. The budget. The budget is your primary responsibility in the Florida legislature. We spend a lot of money, and I think most of us in my audience in particular don't really have any idea what's in the budget. So what's the process like? How much do we spend? Is it a scramble at the last minute? Bring us up to speed on all we need to know about the budget.
Absolutely. It is a scramble at the end for the budget. It's a combination of required spending. Like, for example, the state employees, you know, they know exactly how much that has to be. Sometimes they get raises, sometimes they don't. That's like a fixed amount. So all these fixed amounts go in many, many different agencies, child welfare, health care, Department of Economic Opportunity, that's the unemployment, et cetera. There's so many agencies, so those all have like fixed amounts. And then there's member projects. So, for example, I requested for my district maybe 12 or so projects, mostly for charitable groups who need money. For example, JAFCO is a popular group in my area. They support adoption and foster care, and they take care of autistic children. So I put in a request for them and received that. I got about half the request that I asked for. Some of them are for cities. They need to do water projects, et cetera. So member projects is a part of it. The total amount this year was $101 billion, that's a B, billion-dollar budget. We have about 21 million people in the state. So everyone was really concerned we wouldn't have enough money this year because of the pandemic, but it ended up that we did better than we thought, and then, of course, we had the federal money that came in, which really helped a lot. So the budget seemed to be fine. The largest parts of the budget are education, public education, and health care. The number of people on the Medicaid rolls went up substantially during COVID, and people lost their jobs and, you know, got into much more difficult financial circumstances. And so I want to say between 800,000 and a million, I think, were added to the rolls. And so they had to really increase the Medicaid budget. There was some concern that hospitals were going to get less money. That seemed to work out. And so, you know, a lot of groups got funded where they thought they were going to have trouble. And so it turned out to be a very positive budget, and it was unanimously voted on. The real good news is there was quite a bit of money spent on environmental cleanup and resiliency programs going forward for sea level rise and reservoirs north of the lake, south of the lake, Lake Okeechobee, that is, to deal with, you know, Everglades restoration. And as I said, they're finally coming to terms with some climate change issues and dealing with sea level rise, which is going to be our largest environmental problem going forward. You know, they say if we don't do anything, Miami's going to be underwater in X number of years. So that we use some of the extra money to really deal with that. We put some good money in for affordable housing, which we need. You know, for anyone listening, they know the real estate market is out of control here. And so think about the bottom of the market. If the top of the market's going up, 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 what's happening to the bottom, where people need homes and there's not a lot of inventory, so the prices are going up. So there's some money for cities to give incentives to build affordable housing and more than we had before. There's money to help fix the unemployment system, the technical issues that we had, where you may have heard where many people couldn't log on. But as I said, they did not increase how much money individuals will receive if they need unemployment insurance. One other big money thing that happened is internet sales tax. If you're used to buying things on the internet and not paying sales tax because the store you're buying from doesn't have a physical presence in the state of Florida, you weren't paying tax before, now they're going to collect that tax. But we all were in favor of that. You should collect the tax. It's not fair to the brick and mortar stores here in Florida. It's not a lot of money for each individual, but it's going to, they're expecting about $1 billion. I'm not sure if it's a year or over a few years. The negative about this is that they decided that money is going to go back to businesses to make up for the unemployment trust fund that was used up during the pandemic. So once again, money is not going to social programs, no Medicaid expansion, no increased funding for public school education. It's going to businesses to make sure that their taxes are cut, and it would not have been a lot of money per business. And so that's another frustration that we faced when it comes to individuals paying more tax but not reaping the rewards for that.
So I unfortunately could talk to you. Well, fortunately, I could talk to you for hours. I love talking to you, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate you taking your time from your unbelievably busy schedule. You're back in Tallahassee at special session. I wanted to talk about that, but we don't have any time now because that's an important subject. So much
gambling.
More that we want to talk
gambling.
But honestly, Senator Paulski, what can I say but thank you? I do know how busy you are and how much of a commitment it is for you to do this. Thank you so much for being here. Senator Tina Paulski, representing District 89 in the Florida State Senate. She is a real advocate for all of her constituents, Republicans and Democrats alike. I thank you again. This is Scott Greenberg. Oh my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. Every Monday night from 6 to 7. We thank you for being here. We thank you, Senator Paulski. Have a good night, everybody. Stay safe, and we'll see you next week.